Friday, January 23rd. The first reading from 1 Samuel chapter 24, verses 3 through 21. Saul took 3,000 picked men from all Israel and went in search of David and his men in the direction of the wild goat crags. When he came to the sheepfolds along the way, he found a cave, which he entered to relieve himself. David and his men were occupying the inmost recesses of the cave. David's servant said to him, "This is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'I will deliver your enemy into your grasp. Do with him as you see fit.'" So David moved up and stealthily cut off an end of Saul's mantle. Afterward, however, David regretted that he had cut off an end of Saul's mantle. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, as to lay a hand on him, for he is the Lord's anointed." With these words, David restrained his men and would not permit them to attack Saul. Saul then left the cave and went on his way. David also stepped out of the cave, calling to Saul, "My lord, the king." When Saul looked back, David bowed to the ground in homage and asked Saul, "Why do you listen to those who say, 'David is trying to harm you'? You see for yourself today that the Lord just now delivered you into my grasp in the cave. I had some thought of killing you, but I took pity on you instead. I decided, I will not raise a hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed and a father to me. Look here at this end of your mantle which I hold. Since I cut off an end of your mantle and did not kill you, see and be convinced that I plan no harm and no rebellion. I have done you no wrong, though you are hunting me down to take my life. The Lord will judge between me and you, and the Lord will exact justice from you in my case. I shall not touch you." The old proverb says, "From the wicked comes forth wickedness." So I will take no action against you. Against whom are you on campaign, O king of Israel? Whom are you pursuing, a dead dog or a single flea? The Lord will be the judge. He will decide between me and you. May he see this and take my part and grant me justice beyond your reach." When David finished saying these things to Saul, Saul answered, "Is that your voice, my son David?" And Saul wept aloud. Saul then said to David, "You are in the right rather than I. You have treated me generously, while I have done you harm. Great is the generosity you showed me today when the Lord delivered me into your grasp and you did not kill me. For if a man meets his enemy, does he send him away unharmed? May the Lord reward you generously for what you have done this day. And now I know that you shall surely be king, and that sovereignty over Israel shall come into your possession." Haydock Commentary. These caves were probably no other than the caverns in which shepherds there secure themselves and their flocks in the night and from storms. Some of them in Syria are so capacious as to contain 4,000 men, so that David might well remain unperceived by Saul, who did not enter so far. Some think that David ought to have embraced this opportunity and put an end to these troubles by the death of the usurper. But this was not the opinion of David, and God, who had promised him the throne, had not authorized him to lay violent hands on Saul. He might act on the defensive, but not be the aggressor. St. John Chrysostom observes that David obtained more glory by sparing Saul than by killing Goliath. "Clemency makes a man like God," so says Cicero. David regretted that he had cut off an end of Saul's mantle. He had remorse, fearing he had done amiss. A tender conscience is uneasy about things which are not sinful. David was not to mount the throne until Saul was removed by God's ordinance. He calls Saul his father because he had married Saul's daughter and because the king ought to be the common father of all his people. David refers his whole cause to God to judge and punish according to his justice, yet so as to keep himself in the meantime from all personal hatred to Saul or desire of gratifying his own passion by seeking revenge. So far from it that when Saul was afterwards slain, we find that instead of rejoicing at his death, he mourned most bitterly for him. If it be lawful to seek redress from a magistrate, much more may we appeal to the sovereign judge. The tree is known by its fruit. David is saying, "If therefore I have behaved in this manner, sparing you, no longer trust the reports of others against me." David entertains hopes that even Saul would now be convinced of his innocence. The greatest reprobates may sometimes feel sentiments of compunction, so that we need not hear doubt of Saul's sincerity. He might otherwise have turned upon David with his 3,000 and easily have seized his prey. The Gospel from Mark chapter 3, verses 13 through 19. Jesus went up the mountain and summoned those whom he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, that they might be with him, and he might send them forth to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. He appointed the 12, Simon, whom he named Peter, James, son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, whom he named Boanerges, that is, sons of thunder, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Cananean, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Haydock Commentary. Jesus spent here the whole night in prayer, not that he who had all things to bestow stood in need of prayer or had anything to ask, but to teach us that we must undertake nothing without previously recommending the affair to heaven in humble and fervent prayer. The number 12 is mystical, as appears by choosing Matthias to fill up the place of Judas. They are the 12 foundations under Christ of the heavenly Jerusalem. See Apocalypse chapter 21. He gave his apostles the power of curing maladies both of soul and body, and of expelling devils, that they might prove the truth of their doctrines by the authority of miracles. The evangelist here gives the names of the 12, and first, Simon, to whom he gave the name of Peter, which signifies a rock, thus showing that upon him his church should be founded, as on a rock, never to be overturned. James and John are called sons of thunder to express their great zeal. In conformity to their name, we find these two apostles asking Jesus, in Luke 9:54, "Wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven to consume them?" They spread the fame of the gospel through the whole world. So great was the zeal of St. James that he incurred the resentment of King Agrippa and was the first of the apostles to seal the doctrines of Jesus Christ with his blood. St. John also fulfilled the import of his name, as appears from his Gospel, Epistles, Apocalypse, and the sufferings he underwent at Rome for the faith. Saints Peter, James, and John were the only apostles to whom our Savior gave particular names, a mark, perhaps, of his special affection for them.